Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who, because it's the last show in the series, he's been allowed to bring in games. Here's Richard Herring. Hello, my finest friend. Thank you very much. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square. You're much better than last week's audience. Thank you. They were terrible. Welcome to... They were all pricks. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square... Not you. Leicester Square. You're a cunt. Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was hanging out with Roy Donk and Paul Bufano and Marcus the Worm Hicks from the Colgate Comedy Hour. This is an obscure reference. Just been watching I think you should Leave. Is that what it's called? It's very good. You should watch it. Anyway, they call it Rahalastapa. So... That's going to make someone very happy, that. But not anyone in this room. So it is the last in this series. It's been a lot of fun, this series. We're back at the Square Theatre in June and July. If you want to come along and see a live one there. We're also doing a few around the country in Wells and the New Forest. And there may be more stuff. I might start doing stand-up again. Who knows? So there's all sorts of things to... to look out for. I'm doing, for the people in the room, I'm doing some gigs at the Bill Murray on Mondays in April and May, so come along if you can. But yeah, we'll be back here at the Square Theatre in June and July. It's much more fun live, so do come along. I'm going to go on holiday this coming weekend as we record this. We're off to Cyprus with my family. First time we've been abroad since before the pandemic. I haven't had a drink for 2 years and 3 months. I started thinking I might start drinking on holiday. We'll see how that goes. I might not though. It's been okay not drinking. I've quite liked it, and I'm sort of scared to go back. But you know, might be time. So you know, the next series could be interesting, as I'm saying. If you enjoy the ones where I'm clearly pissed, there was one that Beer 52 sponsored us, and I just two Beer 52. Oh, that's true, man. They're not giving me any money. Don't use Beer 52 unless they send me five. But they're very, it's good. The beers were good and made me drunk. Maybe we should go back to that. Maybe we should. But look, do come along if you can to the live shows. It makes all the difference. Look, we're going to crack straight on. We ended the last series with the daughter of the woman we're seeing in this series. Next series, I'm going to end the series talking to the mum of the person we're talking to. The next series is going to end with... It's going to be a little tradition. Some will be in ghost form. It has to be said. But it's going to be fun. I'm very excited, obviously, about this. My guest this week is the woman that I plan to marry. I'm happy to leave my family. Never see them again. She's probably best known for playing Marge's friend in the Sweeney episode Hard Men. Which is very apt. Will you please welcome... and I was going to say, and she's been making men hard ever since, but I decided I wouldn't say that because I didn't want to be disrespectful, so I didn't say it. Will you please welcome the incredible Janet Ellis, ladies and gentlemen? Janet Ellis. I've been told I have to keep 4 feet away at all times by the courts. Hello, Janet. How are you?
I'm good.
Thank you very much.
It's
absolutely lovely to see you. Thank you for coming along.
Here.
Do you remember being Marge's friend in the Sweeney?
I do, yeah.
Early job?
Very early. Yeah. What I remember about it mainly was that it was on the same day, the filming was on the same day as the Derby, and there was a sweepstake, and I won.
Oh, wow.
The sweepstake, yeah. Good. I was also in bed with John Thorpe.
Okay.
But I mainly won on the horses.
In the show, or just... Were they? Was it not? Was Dennis and Jarman? They're both gone now, haven't they? Were they nice? Were they fun to work with?
They were great fun to work with. Yeah, they were really good. And I was very soon out of drama school, and it was in the days when actors went to the pub at lunchtime,
right.
You know, and betook of the offerings there, and then came back and worked in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And yeah. Seemed perfectly proper to me.
That explains why they always drove around so erratically around there. Had to keep them off the roads. That's good. You did start, you know, you went to Central and had a proper acting training, and you were start out as an actor.
Yeah.
I found out some early jobs you did, and I only found one reference to this, so you might not have talked about this much before. You were directed by Ridley Scott.
True.
In an advert?
Yes.
Tell us what it was for.
It was for marshmallows.
Okay.
And they did a mock-up of that Fragonard painting, you know, the girl on a swing.
Okay.
It was extraordinary. It was at Twickenham Studios, the only time I've ever been there. And this must have cost them an absolute fortune because it was so beautiful. It was like the painting. And I had a costume like the painting and kicked my shoe off like she does in the picture. And I think it was only shown in the north of England, which is a tragic waste.
Was Ridley nice to work with on that advert?
I'm going to say I can't remember.
Okay, good. But, I'm going to say I saw it nice.
Yes,
I read the eyes.
Yes. I can't really remember.
I can't remember. And the two front rows of this audience will remember you best for playing Tika in The Horns. Everything you did has got like a rude. In The Horns of Nimon.
Yes.
Doctor Who.
Yes, it's, yeah, even, I'm sure you'll agree, guys, even aficionados describe it as not very good. not very good. And it was a reworking of the Minotaur myth,
yeah.
Fact fans. And the thing was that the people playing the Minotaurs were strapping lads, but they weren't actually actors. So they were followed around in the rehearsal room by actors who, like a lot of actors, were not very tall. So these very tall men walked around and on flower pots, you know, like you did when you were a kid, followed by small actors being their voices.
Right.
Yeah. I am classically trained, luckily, so I could react as though that was normal.
And you worked with K-9. How was K-9 to...
Very slow. Very, very slow. Yeah, we couldn't overtake K-9.
Right.
And we had to run down a lot of corridors, and because it was the BBC a long time ago, it was the same corridors, but then they'd reconfigure them for our next bit of running, so they'd be slightly different. They were the same corridors, differently arranged. But we couldn't overtake the dog.
Why weren't you allowed to overtake Kane? He had to be leading the...
Some contract thing. I don't know. I don't know, actually.
We came in, it was... Canine was sort of the scrappy-do of Doctor Who to begin with, and then... and then...
Not impressive up close.
No.
I'm honest.
He became quite popular. He had his own show, didn't he? Canine and Company, is that right? Nerds. Yeah.
Did he?
Didn't you get in Canine and Company? Is it called Canine and Company?
Blimey, did he?
Yeah.
What
81. Someone's getting me the...
How on earth? What?
How many episodes? One episode.
That sounds an extravagance, that one episode.
And Tom Baker, was Tom Baker the Doctor?
Yeah, he was, yeah.
That's classic, though. It can't
have been... Flippin-lutely, yeah. He was about to get married to Lala Ward.
Oh, yes.
Who was playing his assistant. But their courtship consisted of massive rows.
Did it?
One end of the rehearsal room to the other, yes. Ooh. And I, an impressionable child. It was good fun.
But they still went ahead and got married?
They did, and then they had more rows and split up. Yeah. Yes.
And then she married Richard Dawkins?
Yes. She hasn't got a type, has she?
Very good. Now, when you first came to my attention... Janet... was in the show Jigsaw.
Thank you.
A few people remember it. As we've been on record before, and we have talked about this before in another podcast, the episode where I became a man was where you played Nell Gwynn, and it was O for Oranges, that's what I remember. You played Nell Gwynn, and you had a nice costume on. I don't know what it was that attracted me. I think I recognised a skittish spirit within you.
Yeah.
I googled today. I thought I'd quite like to see what all the fuss was about. So I googled Nell Gwynn, Janet Ellis Jigsaw.
Yeah.
And the only results that came up were me talking about. So literally nobody else remembers it. There was no images.
No images.
I couldn't find any. I had a good look. couldn't find anything.
Just the same with Charles the First. That was his take on it too.
Were you aware when you were on that show what effect you were having on the burgeoning youth of the United Kingdom? No.
Luckily not.
And have many other people made you aware, or is it just me?
People have mentioned that they weren't entirely watching it to play the very simple word game that we were actually promoting. Yes, I thought they were. We had to find a six-letter word, you know, every week and get clues. And Nell Gwynn was one of the clues, obviously, oranges. Yeah, I thought they were...
Double O.
Yeah. But no, luckily I was not aware of that till later.
No, but it's a nice... Is it a nice thing? Is it a nice thing?
Well, it's a nice thing to have done that show.
Is it nice that you have a legion of men like me that I still hold a candle for you, Janet?
Oh, that's so sweet.
You're my first love.
Thank you. That's a very
If you want
nice...
me to leave my wife and children, I'm happy to...
And I may say it's a very proud, erect candle. So
good, it is.
Well done, you.
Well, not as erect as it once was. I'm nearly 56. And it's only got one bauble at the bottom now. it was an amazing show, though, Jigsaw. It was really there was so much in it.
Yeah.
I'm sure we've talked about this before, but Nosy Bonk, which was not you, I hope.
No.
Because that's going to put me off.
No, it really wasn't. No,
was one of the most extraordinary things. Hey, the name Nosy Bonk. I mean, he's a man. It was a man with an extremely long, phallic nose.
It was sold to me that the guy who took on that role, Adrian, was my co-presenter.
Yeah.
And he had, now keep this quiet, he had trained at Lecoq. That's perfectly reasonable. And as a mime, apparently that's a thing. And he said that this character was, I think, Belgian, explains a lot, and you know, very distinctive in Belgium. And that's how it was sold to me. So we went off and made those little films. It never occurred to me that it looks a bit... It's quite Benny Hill-ish, actually.
Yeah.
He always ended up chasing me.
Yes.
Actually, now I think about it, that's really awful.
It was a very weird, you know...
you know, it is a sort of weird phrase. Someone's tweeted me today saying that it's been brought back. I don't know who's. Have you seen this?
What? No.
There's little sketches online. Nosy Bonk returns. If you want to check them,
surely.
They seem fair. I mean, they're still sinister, but they seem
brought
fairly
back
harmless
by the Association of Psychotherapists, who have made a good living since that show. Yeah, no, it is a very odd one.
Yeah.
It is odd, but I was told it was very special.
I think when it sticks in mind, I mean, it must have terrified a lot of children.
Yeah.
You know, they were scaring us, turning us on. I mean, we didn't know what to do.
Just preparation for adult life.
It was. But it was an incredible cast. And you worked with Clive Doig on that as well, who was also like a... He did so much children's TV at that
time. He has the mind of an 8-year-old, which is a useful thing in children's television because he genuinely... thought like a child, but very creative, very funny. Yeah, and Sylvester McCoy was in it, and David Rappaport, and Wilf Makepeace Lund, do you remember him? He was the inventor guy who... you wouldn't be able to do this now. He used to do all these effects in the studio. We had an invention every week, but they were slightly lethal. And I remember there was one where we had to put cotton in our ears because there'd be an explosion at the end of it. So we duly did. Then discovered what he'd given us to put in our ears was gun cotton.
Right.
And for anyone who knows, that's not what you do. That's the thing that is actually exploding. But anyway, yeah. But it was slightly... The whole thing was slightly heightened anyway. I'd only just had Soph when I got the job. She was literally... Well, she was 10 weeks old when I started filming, which is quite a small person.
Yes.
And we've rehearsed in London, but then because Clive had been banned from the London studios, because he's also really badly behaved, we had to record in Bristol, so we had to go down to Bristol.
Right.
And then the night before each show, looking back, rather unprofessionally, we would go out for quite a late meal all together in the restaurants that we also hadn't been banned from. Choice of two.
Right.
So... Yeah,
I mean,
it
feels like there was a, you know, I think I recognised a wild side within you, Janet. That it feels like there was a wild person.
Unbeknownst, there was. Yeah.
And I guess that's. I mean, there was a lot worse going on in children's television, to be fair. But there's.
Yeah.
But I guess that, you know, that's...
Compared to all that, squeaky clean. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But it's sort of part of it, you know, because you did have to be sort of. Fairly squeaky. Certainly, obviously, moving on to Blue Peter, which wasn't your natural... You know, you didn't really want to become a presenter.
I didn't. I absolutely didn't. No. But, of course, this was before, you know, paparazzi and Twitter and all that stuff, which is hugely good fun, but made that everything that we did off camera stay secret.
Yeah.
Thank God.
You can tell us now, though, Janet, if you want. You can tell us all about it.
I thought I wouldn't have to bleep anything out, but maybe I will.
But you don't have to. I mean, where Richard Bacon got into trouble before Twitter. That...
Yeah, he did, but golly, you know. I'll say golly, but really golly, because poor kid, 21 years old, stitched up by a friend. I mean, but you remember that sort of broadcast about his misdemeanour where a very... sober Lorraine Hegarty had to sit next to a bunch of daffs and say, you know, Richard has let us down and let himself down. And no, he's really, he was stitched up by a friend and he's such a brilliant presenter. Don't let him go. But he's done all right.
He has done okay. Yeah. It was very funny when he came on this as well. Yeah. So, I'd forgotten with Blue Peter how much kind of daredevil stuff you did. I mean, you broke your pelvis.
I did, yes. Parachuting. Yeah. Not advisable. None of that. Neither of those things, actually. No, it's funny with that because, obviously, I hadn't wanted to present anything.
Yeah.
But I was, you know, I was acting for about 5 years and had Soph on the way and then realised that whenever I went to an audition, all the girls who looked like me were at the audition again because there's not much of a meritocracy in that business. So I thought, well, maybe I could do a bit of presenting because although Jigsaw I thought was an acting role, there were bits sort of top and tailing the programme where we spoke directly to camera and people used to go, you never thought of presenting, which I thought was an immense slur on my talent. But then I thought, well, maybe I could do a bit. And the agent I was then with said, well, I've heard that Sarah Green is leaving Blue Peter. And I kind of went, no, I don't mean that sort of presenting. But actually, it's quite weird with Blue Peter because in those days, we were all ex-actors.
Right.
And so the structure of the programme was familiar in a weird way because it was always live. And we didn't have autocue, so we had to learn our scripts the night before the programme, which every time I say that makes me sound older and older, because it's such a weird thing to ask people to do.
Yeah.
You know, you film, you know, the studio Monday and Thursdays. That means Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, you're likely to be filming quite a long way from London, often, and then come back and learn a script for a live show. So, yeah. But what that means is that I think the frontal lobes of my brain are really good. I can remember things very quickly, but I can't remember anything else.
Well, you're remembering a lot of stuff. I mean, I think it's interesting when you talk to people about, you know, the early part of their career. So a lot of people don't remember anything about it, whereas you have good memories for this stuff. You remember very specific
things
about Doctor Who. So that's, you know, that's pretty incredible.
It
was such a big thing, Blue Peter.
Yeah, it was huge.
Then at that point, you were coming in.
It was nearly 25 years old when I joined.
Right.
So yeah, and also about 2 weeks after I joined, both the cats died, and I had to. It's very sad, actually. I had to announce their deaths.
Was it in a suicide pact, or was it just a coincidence? Just both of them.
All I know is they really didn't want to be on television, so maybe it was that. But yeah, it was such an odd thing, because I'd actually my dad was in the army, so I'd moved around quite a lot when I was little. So I'd seen Blue Peter sometimes, but I wasn't, you know, a sort of regular right the way through viewer. But you couldn't escape it. It was part of my childhood anyway, even if I didn't even see it.
Yeah.
But yeah, strange thing to catch that wagon.
And so, you know, when you look back on it, do you think it was? I mean, obviously, because that's become such a big part of who you are.
Yeah.
And how people think of you. Was that decision? Do you think you're pleased you made that decision to go into Blue Peter?
Luckily, I am. Seriously, I am. Yeah. When I went for the audition. And obviously, you go for an audition, you want to be offered the job. You want it to be your choice if you don't do it. But I did actually think, this feels right to me. And I think partly because it was live, which is such a fabulous way of working. And also because it was kind of unpredictable in a weird way. Even though it was very tightly scripted, there was something quite loose about it. And also, this is a really lucky thing, and it sounds very twee, but I actually became really good friends with the people I work with, and that's not a given. You don't have to, you know, it's just a job. But we did all really get on nicely. We didn't actually live together. Some people think we lived in a little house and just came out to do the programmes, but we did actually become genuinely good friends, which is a bonus. Yes. So luckily. Otherwise, I wouldn't want to talk about it.
So you did this you sort of broke the world record for civilian female.
Very briefly,
Still, you know, briefly. I mean, doesn't take long to do a parachute jump, does it?
Well, from 25,000 feet, actually. you're 2.5 minutes in free fall.
Wow.
But, yeah, it was... That's still extraordinary to me that I even did it. It is extraordinary. But I recreated all John Noakes' films that he'd done.
Right.
Since then, some other presenters have done that. But it was the first time, and I think they found it slightly funny that, you know, a much smaller woman in an orange jumpsuit was doing all the things that John Noakes had not minded doing at all. Whereas I was always frightened. Always. I never lost that. Never lost it.
Because I did a parachute jump. I'm the same as you. I really hate heights.
I hate heights.
But I did a parachute jump for one of my stand-up shows. But it's sort of so high that it's almost...
That's
it's
it.
Not
well, you're
the
not...
Same.
I think if I had to climb up a pole, heaven forfend, you know, that was, I don't know, 12,000 feet above the ground, I wouldn't be able to do it. Well, actually, 10 feet. I haven't even been in our loft. That's how much I really haven't. But you're not related to the ground, which is sort of weird, isn't it? You jump onto a map.
Yes.
Unfortunately, you also have to land, which is where the broken pelvis thing...
So was that... on that parachute jump, you broke your pelvis?
No, it was jump 23.
Right.
No, I did 35 jumps in all, but of course they were...
So you broke your pelvis on 23, but still did another 12.
Yeah. Well, okay. I kind of thought I don't want that to be the lot. What I missed out
on... Did you wait for
on...
your pelvis to fix before you
had
did
to wait.
This?
Yes, I did, yes.
Okay.
And also it was an item, obviously, because everything that ever happened to us that was on, you know, was on the level was an item on the programme.
Yes.
So, you know, I only missed one programme for that. Yeah, and I was in hospital. But, that was jump 23. And then Biddy Baxter, who was the editor of the programme, memorably said to me that she would like me to continue my parachuting career and that if I had any more courage, to imagine it as a ketchup bottle, to tip it upside down and give it a good bang to get the last of the ketchup out, which wasn't in the least bit helpful, to be honest. We still got to jump out of a plane.
Yeah.
Which is not logical.
It's sort of weird. I mean, you know, obviously, like the top Gear shows has had a couple of pretty serious accidents, and But like in the, it seems like in the 80s, it wasn't such
well,
a big deal.
I had a worse accident than that, but it wasn't televised. Right. I landed on my face in a large part of Oxfordshire, and I split inside my cheek and below my teeth. I had 12 stitches between my teeth and my jawline. Okay. Went on the show the next day, looking not great, and then showed the stitches to camera three because, right. You know, everything's an item. That was my fault. The pelvis one, not my fault. But that one, definitely, definitely my fault.
Right.
Yeah.
Blimey. Yeah. It's very dangerous. I mean, it's lucky that because John Noakes climbed Nelson's Column in his just regular shoes, right?
And flares.
Yeah.
Seriously, he was wearing flares. I like to think he'd got a scarf on, but I might be imagining that. But he's definitely not in the right shoes.
No.
Or trousers. No. No. No, that is extraordinary. But I think he was fearless, and yeah. I am fearful, so that's where we split.
But then that's more impressive that, you know, in a way, John Noakes being a crazy loon and doing these things.
Yeah, I think Pete Duncan would love to have done all the films I did.
Right.
He had no fear either.
And was there any instance on Blue Peter that were like the elephant doing a poo did you have your own moments like that?
Sodding elephant. Well, I think they always sound a bit, you know, not that exciting, but they're quite funny when it's live. There was a woman who had done a very charming book. She'd had a cat that had kittens, and she had documented the first year of each kitten's life. And, of course, at a certain time, I don't know what the age is, kittens go off to their new owners. So she followed them around the place, documenting them in their various habitats, and then she wrote a charming book with all these photos in. So we reunited them in the studio. But, of course, because, you know, you want to save the best. So for the run-through, the live run-through before the show, they were all in their little cat baskets. And then for the show, we let them out of the cat basket and they didn't care that they were related. And they attacked everything. Right. They really attacked everything. In fact, one of them went up into the light rig and did not come down. I mean, like ever. It didn't come. It was just gone.
Right.
So, yeah.
There's a little skeleton of a cat.
How we laughed.
How many cats died on this show?
Well, so far, three.
We've got to three.
We've got a big count, yeah.
This is only your stay.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
So, I mean, the exit from Blue Peter is sort of talked about a lot, and, you know, whether you were pushed or whether you decided
to go. He's also sitting in the audience, my son Jackson was the reason I left.
Yes. Does he know? Are we not going to...
Yeah. Oh, darling. The thing is that I wasn't sacked from the programme. I mean, it was perfectly obvious for the last... It was so blissful. The last 4 or 5 months on the show, I was too pregnant to do anything high up, cold or horrible, so I just stayed in the studio all the time going, oh, that looked horrible. Let's make some biscuits or whatever. No, it was like being let off games, which was my favourite thing at school. So I had quite a long time with that. And obviously I was very, very pregnant. And from the minute I announced I was pregnant, people sent in presents for the baby. So all of that, jolly nice.
Yeah.
However, BBC issued a contract for that show. I was on a yearly contract, and I did not get another contract. Now, whether or not I could have been beguiled into staying, but I already had Sophie, who was 4 when I joined and 8 when I left. And, you know, working with a small child who you go away from quite a lot, maybe not great if there's 2 of them as well. But so it's not that I was sacked, but there's a slightly technical fudge there, I think.
Yes, and was it you weren't married? Was that the issue?
I must have forgotten that. I wasn't then married to them. In fact, when I got pregnant, I wasn't even living with. Anyway, no, we weren't married.
Yeah.
And I think that was because Anne Diamond was also having a baby out of wedlock, and some MPs stood up in the House of Commons, sort of, wherever you look, it's these women. But I have to say, within the programme, there was nothing like that.
No.
Genuinely nothing at all. And when I told Biddy Baxter I was having a baby, she said, oh, good, another viewer, you know. So, he wasn't, actually. Don't think you've ever watched it, have you? No.
Well, she'll be very disappointed. And so you sort of took some time off to be a mum, but you were still doing things.
That's so kind, isn't it? It makes it sound as though I sort of... at home, happily embroidered. I think it's a bit of both, really. I mean, in that time, I have to say, I did Daz adverts, which meant that I didn't really have to do anything else. I live in a house called the Daz Palace, just to make sure everybody understands. No, it's sort of odd. I mean, I did know when I joined Blue Peter that nothing else would be like it again. You know, it was a big show. Yeah. I was 28, so not a kid. I'd had 5 years as an actress, and I knew that I would never have that sort of solid going-to-work feel ever again. But I also knew that if I didn't have a good reason to leave, Jack, I don't know when I would have left, because it's jolly nice to keep doing that. And I don't think that does the programme any favours either, you know, if you stay too long. Yeah. I never wanted to be bored by it. I had a horror of hearing the script arrive and thinking, oh, not another programme, because I genuinely never felt that.
Yeah.
So it was probably a little hastened, but I wasn't going for any records there.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I mean, you've done, like, it's been really fascinating to... I mean, I know you very well, Jan. I want to say, on my 50th birthday, my wife took me to the Science Museum in London to see the Gemma Chan robot. That was there at the time, which was very nice because Gemma Chan has also got a place in my heart.
I know.
We were queuing up to go into the Science Museum, do you remember this? I bumped into you, which felt like it was like another...
A gram, some sort of, yes.
Like, we've arranged for Janet Ellis to be...
Presentagram, yeah.
So that was very nice.
It was nice.
Yeah.
It was a good exhibition,
and then
that,
I saw a robot of Gemma Chan. Yeah. And what else is there? I thought, I've got a...
Day made. It was a good exhibition, that.
It was good, yeah.
It was really good, all those robots. Really good. I don't remember.
I don't know if that was the last time I saw you. We have done so because we both lived in near Hammersmith. While I lived in Shepherd's Bush. And
yeah.
We were doing lots of things at the Lyric.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. So I should have forgotten about that. Yeah. Ha ha Hammersmith. We did.
It was nice.
It was really nice.
It's been very strange to become friends with you. You don't know what's going on in my head when I'm talking to you. So if you do, I mean, yeah.
Friendship is a broad church.
To be fair, I've talked about it so much. I think you do know exactly what's going on. You've done some amazing things. I like, this is from Wikipedia, and this just sounds like it's AI, to be honest, this particular bit of Wikipedia. This sounds like the most extraordinary thing, just from this description. In January 2007, Ellis appeared on the BBC reality singing show, Just the Two of Us, partnered with Alexander O'Neill, which is quite weird, first of all.
Really
despite weird. Being saved by Stuart Copeland... That's what? From the police on the first night. On the 3rd of January 2007, she was the second celebrity to be eliminated after Judge CC Sammy described her as having the vocal characteristics of a cat on speed.
Not true.
Ellis managed to show good humour in the face of the defeat, stating she'd had fun, a lot of fun. That sounds like something out of Viz.
I had some fun.
What? Tell us about your take on that, because that's the Wikipedia take.
I was very excited to do the show. Well, I tell you, the really lovely thing about that show was singing with an orchestra, which was a huge blast, and I really loved it. What was a shame is that Alexander O'Neill, who is, you know, a lovely man and a wonderful singer, not entirely what you might call there at rehearsals, in person, not actually there, not really there. I mean, he was really lovely, but I don't think he got the idea of the competition element. And so what would happen is that I would rehearse, because I turn up for rehearsals, And then we would rehearse the song, and then he would arrive and go, no, we're not doing it like that, for half an hour. And that's how it worked with us. I liked him a lot. In fact, it was all recorded around Christmas, and I had a party at the house, and he came to it, which was really nice, because he sure as hell didn't have to. And then we went to some restaurant that he wanted us to go to, and it was one of those places that don't really start serving food until about 2 a.m. But there were fun elements, but I was wrongly castigated by CC, whatever, because I don't think I did. But obviously somebody's got to go. It's a competition, it's television, I understand, but it's not fair.
Yeah.
It's really not
fair.
I'm
sorry to have brought that up.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, but at least Stuart Copeland saved you.
Stuart Copeland saved me. Oh, and the best thing about that
he wasn't
was
even in the show.
One of the other... Well, one of the other singers was Sarah, you know, who's married to Andrew Lloyd Webber, Sarah Brightman. Right, and because we were paired with professional singers, right? And so I can't remember who she sang with. And then, obviously, I was eliminated quite early on. But I came back for the last show, like you do with those. You know, you come on and you sing your big group song. And in the corridor, bumped into one of the Jacksons, who was one of the judges, the one with the hat.
The one with the hat.
The
Hattie Jackson, I think he was called.
Oh, I thought it was not Doctor Who people here. No, it begins with a T. Anyway.
T-Bone?
Tito? Yes, there you go.
Tito Jackson.
So he was one of the judges, and he was in the corridor, and he said to me, this is only the first time I'd ever spoken to him. He said, my friend really wants to talk to you. I'm just going to dial him now. And he dialed up, and his friend was David Guest, right? You know, he used to be married to Liza Minnelli. And he handed the phone over, and he said, David Guest really wants to speak to you. And David Guest said, I think your voice is fantastic and I want you to come to my party. And as he talked more, I realised he thought I was Sarah Brightman. and I was really, really tempted to go, OK, I'm going to come, because he would have been so bemused to have me at the door. He'd probably got an entry phone and everything. You think, who's that? And it's very not Sarah Brightman.
Oh.
Yeah, very strange.
I'm sorry to have brought this in. The
actually,
traumatic
it is,
incident.
It is now. It's quite, yeah. I didn't know there'd be triggers.
But you also did Come Dine With Me with Susie Amy, who's the actress from Footballer's Wives.
Chardonnay, yeah.
Tony Christie.
Yeah.
And Goldie.
Yeah.
How was that? I mean, that's, you know, this is...
I know.
Like it's a fever dream.
It's names out of a hat, isn't it? It's totally names out of a hat. Actually, rather boringly for production, we all really got on,
right,
despite being a very disparate group.
Yes.
I will now place a small crown on my head and say I was the only one who actually cooked, but I won anyway. So, but actually, it was really weird because we weren't being nasty about each other. I honestly don't think Tony Christie could be nasty about anyone. Not for ready cash or his feet to a fire or anything. Same goes for Susie.
Yeah.
Goldie, he's not a nasty man, you know, so he's not particularly au fait with the current, you know, who's on telly and stuff, but he coped really well, and he's so smart. I mean, he's fascinating, absolutely fascinating. So we talked long into the night, and some of it got filmed, but it is a very strange thing, and you're also... You're not supposed to know who's going to be there, you know, when you turn up on day one.
Yeah.
And so we all went up to Goldie's. Was the first house, and it was the Christmas edition, which meant it was recorded in November, but we all had to pretend it was Christmas. And I was wearing a party dress, and outside his house, and I was being mic'd, and because in this party dress, and this little technical detail, there were no pockets, so nowhere for the sound pack to go, you know, this little box thing. So I said, oh, no. And I said, oh, no. And he said, oh, it's all right. You know, they're allowed to do this, sound people. He said, I'll clip it to your bra. They're allowed to, because they've been to some training. And so he...
Is that what he told you?
That's what they've always told me. So he clipped it to my bra. And then I said something joking, right? There's a whole crew there. And I said, well, yes, it's a good thing I'm wearing knickers. It's not that funny, but anyway. And he said, it is a good thing, because on the civilian version, a lot of them don't. Because they don't want VPL, technically. Right. But I thought, golly, well, you know, professional to the last. I was fully... But yeah, but it was... I did actually sneakily find out who was going to be there because I had a horror of it being someone really, really well known from something I didn't watch or know. Yeah, and then well, I would just spend the whole of the evening going, who is he? So I did find out. Well, I'm an actress. I'm classically trained. I can pretend I don't know that. And it, yeah. And it was actually, it was quite sweet, all of
just,
that.
Do you still get together, the four of you, and have dinner together now?
We don't, but it was strange. Because it was the Christmassy one. And obviously they come, you know, they come to your house and they set up this enormous filming rig. It goes on for hours and hours. And I said to, it's Jack again, I said to Jack, can you get one of your musician friends to come and play the piano and we'll do some carols? Because you were supposed to provide some sort of entertainment halfway through the show.
Yeah.
They tell you it's optional. It isn't. So I said, no, you can do it if you like. And I thought, well, we'll do it. I've got a piano, we'll do some carols. And Jack was incredibly reluctant to contribute to this opus. Incredibly reluctant. Anyway, he said his friend Amy would come over. So we're sitting having the first course, because the meal goes on for hours, because in between each course, of course, they take them away and go, how horrible is she really, you know, all that. But anyway, while we're having our first course, I could hear Amy upstairs and realise that Amy can't really play the piano terribly well. So we sang along to something, but I don't really... Anyway, I won for my charity.
Won.
I won for
and
my
no
charity.
And no one went crazy. The best come dine with me
I
when
know.
That guy goes nuts.
It is, yeah.
Just enjoy
it
your
is.
Money.
And you're allowed real alcohol and stuff,
yeah.
You know? So, yeah, it
dangerous.
Can be. It can be.
Very dangerous. Well, look, I've been listening to your audiobook of your more recent novel. You've written two novels. You're working on your third novel.
I am, yeah.
How did you get... A, I want to say it's fantastic. B, very early on, I mean, it's written by Janet Leyson. In the first chapter, the female, middle-aged, I'd say female character, thinks that she could probably bring off someone with her mouth, which wasn't what I was expecting from someone from Blue Peter. I mean, you know, I Blue Peter, but not Blue Peter. So it's quite they're quite sexy.
Yeah.
Quite sexy novels.
Both of them are, yeah.
Yeah, what it's very, you know, and Janet reads them herself.
I do. Yeah, I do. I do, which is actually I didn't want to. You know, you do an audio, but well, there's an audio book. And I had a wish list of actresses, much as you do, but for different reasons. I had a wish list of actresses that I wanted to come and read my book, mainly because I didn't know any of them, and I thought they could then be my friend afterwards because they were really nice, and they were all whatever busy.
Oh.
So the publisher said, well, why didn't you? I genuinely didn't want to.
Oh, you're great. You've got to do it yourself.
Genuinely didn't want to, but it is really odd because you've done this, haven't you? You sit in a little room, but a tiny, tiny booth with your own words in front of you, and the other side of it, impassively, sits the producer, who's also the sound engineer. So I had to read some pretty fiercely sexy stuff that I'd written with David Roper, the other side of the glass, and to his eternal credit, he did not flinch. Because if he'd looked up and gone, you know, he would have. I don't think I'd have been able to read it at all.
Yes.
But I was aware that
Well, you wrote it, you should read it, Janet. If you're going to write film,
now
then
I see
you have
that,
to read
now
it and
I see
what you've done.
Now I see that to ask anyone to do that.
I mean, it's not. But I mean, they're Well, the one I haven't read the first one, but this one is beautifully written. And what is this something you'd always been doing, writing, or is it did you just come to this and think I'll give it a crack? And because it's writing a novel is the hardest thing.
It
to,
is. Yeah.
I would love to write a novel, and it's too difficult.
I had always wanted to write, and I had written a few articles and stuff, and never had a problem with that. But the longer time went on, the more I thought, if I can't do it, I will be mortified, but if I try and I fail, I will feel worse. And those two things just kept mixing up all the time until my poor family, who'd had approximately 90 million years of me saying, I really want to write, but I'm too nervous, just sort of said, well, I think you should try it now. And I do feel, a serious tone here, I do feel really, really lucky because it is what I wanted to do, and all the things that happened as a result of it have been absolutely joyful. And the first book, The Butcher's Hook, went to publishers under a pseudonym, which was really important because they, first of all, I don't know what book people think a Blue Peter presenter would write, but it probably isn't that.
Yeah.
And also, although Blue Peter was donkeys years ago, I didn't want a single person going, well, that's why you got a deal, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it was a huge little private badge of honour that Joe took my book forward and not me.
Yes. Yeah. And so is this going to be, is this the way, I mean, I know you're doing that, you know, you always do this variety of things.
I like to sound as though I'm really busy, and in fact I'm not, so that's very handy.
But,
yeah.
You know, writing a novel every couple of years is a big project.
It is,
so,
yeah.
You know, if you were doing nothing else, that would be still amazing, but it's yeah. obviously going well.
Yeah, and... well, I do feel amazingly lucky, and yeah. It was really nice to be on the other side of an audition process, you know, with publishers wanting to publish me. It's really lovely, but doesn't mean, just because I have written the two, that writing the third is all easy, and it's weirdly difficult, isn't it?
It's very hard.
Why is it so hard?
Writing a book, I mean, writing a novel is absolutely the hardest.
It
I think, like, if you're writing from experience, you know, my last book's entirely about what happened to me last year, and you know that's easy because you go, oh, I know what happened, so I'll write what happened next.
I think it's still difficult because ultimately, you know, it's the cliche, it's you and the blank piece of paper, and yeah. and I'm very undisciplined, really yeah. seriously undisciplined, and in the process of wanting to write, which obviously took a long time, I had writer friends, you know, who would say, well, the trick is to get up at 5, you know, and then do 5,000 words. And I didn't do that. Or they'd say, you know, well, the thing is to get everything else done and then start at 4. And I didn't do that either. But I know now that I have managed to write 2 books with sort of cobbling it together somehow. So that's lucky. That's yes. It doesn't go so well at writing groups. Well, just whatever. But though I do feel really lucky with it, that it was something that I wanted a lot, but it made me more nervous than anything.
Sure.
Handing it over made me incredibly nervous. And it still does make me feel very nervous.
Well, it's terrific. But, you know, I think that I do a book version of this podcast, and I've talked to quite a lot of authors, and it is just everyone works completely differently.
Yeah.
So there is no rule to it, and you can't say, you know, like the idea of, I mean, I do wake up at 5 o'clock because my kids wake up at 5 o'clock, so I could try and get a couple of hours in there. But that's not going to work for everyone.
Also, I sort of worried, I think, because, you know, I'm an actress, and I think I worried that I'd have to become a writer, that I'd have to sort of, for a long time, I just thought, what do writers wear? You know, if I could get the clothing right, I might. So it is a bizarre process of being really nervous about something that I really wanted. Also, it is a solo occupation, you know, and I've always said, oh, I'm, you know, I really love team player. I'm just a team player. You know, I love it when it's live and everybody's really important at the same time, and I love being on stage. And then I thought, what that actually means is I can pass the buck. It's never going to be just my fault. And, of course, writing is all my fault. Yeah. You know, there's not a word there that's anybody else's idea.
And you hardly ever break your pelvis when you're writing as well. So that's the advantage of
no,
writing.
No ladders involved.
Occasionally. You might do. look, and also... so much to talk to you about. You've got an MBE.
Oh yeah,
that's pretty impressive.
That's amazing, isn't it?
I mean, you know, deserved. I'd have given you one immediately after that episode of if I'd been the Queen. I mean, bang.
Thank
you. I mean,
if
I'd been the Queen, maybe.
Well, yeah, I think that's what it says on the citation. Yeah. No, that is.
I mean, because you do a lot of charity work and.
I know, but loads of people do, don't they? And I've got the. It's a really lovely thing that. Also, it's really. Have you seen one? You may not have seen one up close. They're quite Vivian Westwood. They're quite Vivian Westwood. They're quite sort of... The MBE is pink and velvety, and the one they give you on the day, the one William gave me on the day, is quite large. I mean, I wouldn't wear it now because it would really drag this. But you can send off for a small one.
Right.
I mean, you pay for it, of course, but you can send off for this tiny version, which I really like. I don't wear that either. I wish I could find my Puffin Club badge. That's my saddest badge story. I was member number 100 of the Puffin Club.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, exactly. And I cannot find that badge.
You probably gave it away. You gave me one of your jigsaw badges.
I did, yes.
Which I've still got.
Good, good.
Yeah.
Yes, I've also given away loads of Blue Peter badges.
Yeah, I don't want a Blue Peter badge.
All to deserving traffic wardens. Ha ha.
It's jigsaw all the way. So William gave you the MBE?
He did, yeah.
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 I was, I've told this story before, but after I'd raised some money for Refuge doing my stupid... International Women's Day thing. My friend, who was an ambassador, approached my wife and said, "Do you think I could put Richard Ford for an MBE for this? Do you think he'd be interested?" And she said no.
She said no.
Yeah, she said no.
And is that true?
I mean, you know.
You don't know till it's offered, do you?
It'd be nice to be asked.
It'd be nice to be asked, yeah.
It'd be nice to turn it down. Yeah. That's what I did. I go, no, fuck exactly. You, Queen Elizabeth II. I hope you'll be all right.
And also for a staunch...
Is it too soon to say that? This is before.
Yeah.
Now I have nothing but respect.
No, well, it's a conflict for any staunch Republican like me that you have to go
yes,
to.
Yeah, well, exactly.
It is.
You know, I don't help matters by saying fuck you, Queen Elizabeth II, and talking about Prince Andrew a lot on this podcast. But
in a way, I think you do.
I don't help myself. I'm going to ask you some emergency questions, okay. Just so we've done it. They're going to be nice ones.
Oh.
I'm not going to ask you about human centipedes.
Good. No,
unless you really want me to.
No.
Janet Ellis, if you could go into a chrysalis, dissolve and come out as anything you wanted to come out, like a cat, you know, a caterpillar turns into a butterfly. I imagine it chooses that.
Yeah.
You can go into a chrysalis, you can come out, you dissolve and you come out as anything you want. What would you like to come out of a chrysalis as if you could be anything?
Anything or anyone. Anything.
Be anyone, anything, still be you.
Oh, not me. I've played that game. I think I'd quite like to have a go at being Jeffrey Archer and see how that feels.
Really?
Because it looks really weird from here.
Well,
so
you're the first
I would
person
like to
say that.
See how that feels on the other side.
I mean, you're a better writer than Jeffrey Archer. I'd say a more moral person than Jeffrey Archer.
Wow, thank you.
You probably haven't sold as many books as Jeffrey Archer.
No, I haven't. Although he really, really enjoys writing. He loves to write.
Yeah.
He loves to
There's
write.
There's another Jeffrey Archer, isn't there? There's two Jeffrey Archers, and the other Jeffrey Archer spells it G-E-O-F.
Oh, yes.
He's just got that job.
Yeah.
So that people will think it's Jeffrey Archer, right?
Yeah.
So he's got books, and they'll go next to Jeffrey Archer books in the shop. It's quite clever, isn't it?
It is quite clever. But I also heard Harlan Coben being interviewed the other day, and he said the only people who ever say they really enjoy writing are not very good writers. I don't know if those facts are connected.
I think it's not. It's not a pleasant experience. I'm going to ask my AI question.
I'm
very interested to hear your answer to this. An AI computer came up with this. What is the most ludicrous thing you have ever done in the name of love, Janet Ellis?
Well, it's never ludicrous in the name of love, is it?
Well, it can be.
But
if it goes wrong. Has it ever gone wrong for you? I can't imagine, Janet, you've ever been knocked back.
Luckily, we're really. I think it's fairly ludicrous to go to Bristol from London to meet someone on a platform to say hello and then get straight back on a train because I didn't have time to spend in Bristol. That's pretty silly. I didn't even have a senior rail card then, so it was an expensive thing. I think it's all ludicrous, isn't it?
That's quite nice, though.
It's very
as long as they wanted to see. As long as they knew you were coming and wanted to see,
and
he just turned up on the off chance.
He didn't work at the station, just to say. He also had to make a journey to this platform.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's too lovely.
Well, it's
that's too lovely for this.
See,
place.
Now I think it's ludicrous, because if one of my kids said that, I said, for goodness sake, give me the money. Let's not. You can phone him, them. So don't.
Good.
No.
Do it on Zoom.
Yeah, exactly. Come on, WhatsApp.
Yeah.
Anyway, I did that. It was fairly ludicrous.
Good. That's very nice. And if you could, if all that, you've got an MBE, so you've done quite well, but if all the art galleries and museums in the world said, we want to thank you for all the work you've done and for being Nell Gwynn, you can take one thing from any museum or art gallery in the world. What one object or artifact or piece of art would you like to have in your house?
Oh, my. Serious. That's serious.
Yeah.
My youngest works for an art dealer, so we have knowledge. But despite that, I'd really love one of those massive Louise Bourgeois spiders. Yeah?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, for the garden, obviously, because it's quite big. I think she is flipping amazing and... Yeah, to have something that she'd actually worked on would be... Or Yayo Kusama, you know that...
I don't know that.
You don't? No. That Japanese woman who paints using dots a lot.
Okay.
She's quite senior now.
Yes.
And periodically, when the world gets too much for her, she checks herself into an asylum. Yeah, she declares herself mad.
Okay.
Keeps working. Her stuff is great. I think you'd really like it.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to get, when you get home today, it's going to be one of those spiders in your garden.
Oh, wow.
That's just the little thing we do for whatever people say to that.
That's
I haven't said that before. It's just one of the little things we do. A perk
of it. I thought you just got a mug. Isn't that
it's
amazing?
It's very nice. It's why we're not really making any money out of doing it. I think I'm heavily, millions and millions of pounds in debt. Here's a question. This is a question for you, and you this might have happened to you. Have you ever been potholing?
No way.
Oh.
Why do people do that? I don't understand that at all.
When you jumped out of planes, I thought they'd have forced you to pothole on Blue Peter. That's the entrance exam.
Honestly, that would be my worst nightmare.
So you don't like heights and you don't like enclosed spaces?
No, and I'm not bungee jumping.
So you don't like being inside, outside, up, down? You don't want bungee jump?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
There was a thing on social media about one of those. Every now and again, someone bungee jumps and they don't tie the thing up properly.
I know, and also, even if you do, what are you doing? You just, no.
Yeah.
No,
but potholing. You broke your pelvis.
Potholing really is like a nightmare thing to me. Okay. Absolute nightmare having to go through that and in the dark. And, you know, it's like, look at those little boys in Thailand. I mean, you know, they'd have to do that to me, actually drug me to get me in and out.
I don't think they drug the little boys to get them in. I mean, maybe on the way out, but I don't think they...
They drug them on the way out.
Janet Ellis says they drug the boys to cut...
On the
way... I didn't
think
we'd get that on this...
This is a fact. They
turned Elon Musk on me. They drugged the kids, put them in a cave, filled up with water. Conspiracy. Come on, Janet. You're better than this. So recently in the news, you've been saying it was lovely to have your daughter Sophie on the podcast. And
she behaved
fantastic.
Properly. Good.
You've brought her up very well. She's a lovely young lady. but you've been talking about the fact... Because this Nepo baby thing's come up recently. So you've been talking about her not being a Nepo baby.
No, but I am a Nepo mum because I said to her, tell Richard I'd really like to do this podcast. Isn't that true?
That is true.
So wherever Sophie is, I'm not that far behind going, and me, third woman in queue? No, I think. I mean, I think if Sophie had become a Blue Peter presenter, it might have been a little strange. But not strange in that she couldn't do it or that I would mind that she did it. But I think people might then have made the association. But in all honesty, I wish I could claim more for her career, but I actually can't.
Yeah.
Because it's very different from mine.
It is very different. I mean, no, but also, I suppose, being brought up by people who do the job and, you know, work in the business, it's a possibility. You know, you see it as a possibility.
Oh, absolutely.
But anyone who wants to do, you know, I'm not saying anyone, but because obviously not everyone can be a superstar pop star. But anyone who wants to, you know, has a feeling that they want to be in that area, it's just the confidence to try.
Actually, I think that's probably more about what, you know, why it works, because we did know that if it didn't work out, it didn't matter. She could have another go at something. It wasn't like investing her whole life into it. And she's smart, Soph, as you know. And so she was going to have a go at something and see what happened.
Yeah.
And it worked out.
but she, you know, I'm disappointed for the future generations that she has only had male children. And I think she should make sure she keeps on having children too, because it has to...
I know you're
carry
right.
on. It has to carry on.
I have got two other children,
they have not children of their own yet,
and they are slightly nervous about the amount they're required to produce.
One of them's got to produce the next Janet Ellis.
Yes, exactly. Well, or indeed Sophie. No. But Sophie's got five boys. That's true. But yeah, no, it's funny that Nepo idea. That in any way, shape or form, I could have influenced people in the music business, having appeared with Alexander O'Neill and being voted off second week.
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
it's not the best badge, is it? Maybe that's how this works.
Maybe it's how it works. Maybe it does. And so apart from the next novel,
yeah,
what else? Is there anything else on the horizon?
Well, I too make a podcast.
Yes.
This is like dueling podcast. I make a podcast called Twice Upon a Time, where I ask people, well, hey, do you want to be on my podcast, Richard?
Yeah, of course.
What's your favourite childhood book?
What a good question. Am I allowed to...
Anything.
Am I allowed to pick Peanuts by
Charlie
Brown?
Absolutely anything.
Because it used to drive my dad crazy that I would get book tokens and buy cartoons.
Paul Sinha chose the Guinness Book of Records.
That's a good one.
Anything. And we simply get you a copy of your book. We both read it. We chat about it.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, it's lovely.
I'll have a think properly about it and think of a proper one.
No, it's probably the one you loved that. It's probably the one you think of.
I think Charlie Brown's probably shit, though. That's the isn't it? In hindsight, I loved it as a kid, but a lot of them didn't have jokes at the end.
Well, we can. We'll try and
we'll find
you the copy. But but it is a lovely thing because normally the book that people like is the one they liked in a fairly guileless fashion and not to impress their friends or whatever. And when we're talking about it, they get, yeah, it's nice. It's your childhood.
Yeah.
And I'm very, very nosy.
It's when I started doing podcasts, no one was doing them, so you could just do whatever you wanted.
Yeah.
But now it's really hard to come up with a good idea for a podcast.
Yeah. I'm still in the foothills.
That's a good one, though, but, you know, because everything, so many people are doing them.
Yeah.
When did you start doing your podcast?
About 2 years ago.
Right. In lockdown?
In lockdown.
Yeah, so a lot of people started in lockdown.
We had the idea before that.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I do really like doing it because it introduces me to people's book choices that I haven't read or go back and find something that I'd forgotten I loved, which is a treat.
That's great. Yeah, it's who's really nice. Who's been your best guest so far?
Well, I personally was really excited about Hayley Mills because wanted to be Hayley Mills for a large part of my childhood. And I don't mean replace her. I mean actually be her.
Yeah.
And I got the privilege of telling her that. Yeah, she was great.
She freaked out as you are about me telling you about the stuff?
I recognise the expression. Yeah. I recognise, yes. What can you do with this information, she was thinking.
We got the human centipede answer accidentally.
Yeah. No, she... yes.
That's good. And who's been... Have you had a terrible guest who's let you down?
Yes, and then... No, I haven't. I think because... Like I say, there's something a bit guileless about choosing a children's book. Yeah. So that automatically takes you back to that little person and you have nowhere else to go.
And
so.
You know everyone, Janet. Don't you? You've got all these shows you've done, you've met all these people and everyone loves you, so you can get...
Wow, really?
Yeah,
okay, so. I hadn't thought of it like that. I'd just be going the usual route through their agents. But no, it is nice, yeah. Only today, Lorraine Kelly talking about an Enid Blyton book.
Which Enid Blyton one?
Claudine at St. Clair's.
I was hoping it was going to be one of the racist ones. Here we go. Amazing. If someone chose the racist one.
Any Enid Blyton book, actually.
It is any. There's one that's really racist, though.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to say what it's called.
No, don't say what it's called. But there are elements, certainly, in every book. And certainly there were in Claudine at St. Clair's.
There.
Yeah.
Well, that's why we must rewrite... If someone rewrites all your books to take out all the naughtiness...
Oh, they'd be very thin. No.
No, it's fair enough. Look, Janet, it's an absolute privilege and honour to talk to you. And thank you for closing this series, as your daughter closed the last series. Everyone should read your books or listen to them.
There's only two, so it's not going to take long. Thank you.
They're fantastic. And we look forward to... And the podcast as well. And whatever comes next. More acting, I hope. Do some more acting.
I would love to. Yeah. I have never had a plan, and this is where it's led me. Right here.
Right here.
Right here, right now.
Fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen... My next wife, Janet Ellis. Thank you. Thank you very much, everyone. Thanks for coming. Thanks to everyone at Leicester Square Theatre for having us. See you next time. Come and see us next time. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Rahulus the Bar with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Janet Ellis. The music is provided by Scant Regard. I am indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. Also to Chris Evans, not that one, or that one, or that one. Thank you to all of his team from Go Faster Stripe. They all live in a little hut in Wales together, and they are lovely. Thank you to Jess and everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre for having us during this lovely run. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Go to richardherring.com/Rahulastapur to see when we are doing more live shows. richardherring.com/gigs to see when I am doing stand-up. What?
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.